Okay, welcome to Sakapandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent. So, as always, when we start a practice, we want to check in with our motivation. And the Mahayana Great Vehicle Motivation is to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. So that's our motivation for doing this teaching today. So, Sakyapandita is clarifying the sage's intent as one of his many great masterpieces, which is basically a roadmap for how to attain enlightenment through the Mahayana Great Vehicle Path. A large part of the text is concerned with the six perfections. And today we're going to be talking about the sixth perfection, the perfection of wisdom. So Sakyapandita defines that as the exact knowledge of the real nature of what is to be known. So today we're going to talk about Sakyapandita's teaching on what that is and how to do it. So in the chapter on wisdom, Sakyapandita spends a lot of time refuting erroneous philosophies. He goes through the non-Buddhist philosophies and then the Buddhist philosophies, of which there are many, although there are four main ones. He doesn't go into detail to refute them in this book, otherwise the book would be really long. But he has a text called Treasury of Reasoning, which goes into this topic in detail. So that's something you might want to have a look at. So the bottom line that Sakyapandita comes to in this discussion, in this text, is that the highest philosophy is the Madhyamaka middle way. So the middle way is in the middle of the two extremes of permanence and annihilation, which are also known as eternalism and nihilism. So these are the extremes which are to be abandoned or transcended or refuted. Sakyapandita also goes into detail about refuting other erroneous Buddhist philosophies, such as the white panacea. But again, we won't go into that today. We'll just move ahead, with the middle way. So Sakyapandita quotes Chandragoman, who was a great 7th century Nalanda master. And Chandragoman says that to attain the realization of complete Buddhahood, you need three factors, and they must come together. And he gives the example of an archer and a bow and arrow, and he says that compassion is like the bow, discerning wisdom is like the arrow, and skillful means are like the expert archer. That is us, the meditators, the practitioners. And the great masters have given us a format for practicing, which is listening, contemplation, and meditation as three steps. So listening, because Dharma is mainly transmitted orally, we need to listen to teachings. In this case, Sakyapandita adds study to the category of listening, because to understand and realize wisdom, we need to do some studying, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So we listen and we study. And then the second step is contemplation, where we think about what we've listened to and studied and make sure we have it clear what was the teaching and what the teaching was not. And when we're absolutely clear about the topic, then we go into the meditation. We need to make sure that we have this clarity before we meditate, because as we'll see in a minute, to meditate without the clarity of the topic can lead to some serious consequences that we don't want. So, what happens is, if you meditate without understanding the view of emptiness correctly, you can end up being reborn in a realm that you don't want to be in. For example, the form realm or the formless realm are some of the higher God realms in samsara. The problem with those kinds of rebirths are when you get to those realms, everything is nice. It's too nice. You don't have any suffering. And as a result, you don't develop compassion. And because you don't develop compassion, you don't accumulate merit while you're there. So because you don't accumulate merit, you don't develop your morality fully. And then when you're reborn, Sakya Pandita says, these beings are dull and ignorant and sleepy, and they lack skillful means, and so they're reborn in the lower realms. A lot of these situations are because the practitioner meditated exclusively on emptiness and did not include compassion. And as been mentioned many times, the bird needs two wings to fly. We need metta and wisdom, or compassion and wisdom. So therefore, we need to really study carefully and contemplate carefully in order to have a thorough understanding before we meditate. So Sakya Pandita gives us some titles of some texts that we need to study, because without studying, as we've said, wisdom cannot be realized. So we need authentic texts and we need an authentic teacher. So as far as authentic texts go, Sakya Pandita recommends the Prajnaparamita, or the Perfection of Wisdom texts, of which there are, that's a category of texts, and there's various texts, Prajnaparamita and others, that fall in that category, including the Diamond Sutra. Sakya Pandita also recommends Chandrakirti's Sevenfold Logical Reasoning, Nagarjuna's Root Verses of the Middle Way, Shantideva's Guide to Entering the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, and Shantideva's Compendium of Trainings, as well as Sakya Pandita's Treasury of Reasoning, which we mentioned. So we need to study those texts, and we need to also have an authentic teacher who can help us get through those wisdom texts. And these allow us to refute the erroneous doctrines that we want to eliminate in our meditation. And we want to refute these erroneous doctrines through our own reliable experience-based knowledge. And the conclusion that we want to come to in our meditation is selflessness. The selflessness of persons and the selflessness of phenomena. And if we do this, these wisdom practices, there's just a tremendous amount of virtue or merit that's accumulated in these practices. And there are lots of examples given in the text about this. One of which is that it's more virtuous to teach one four-line verse of a wisdom text than it is for a sentient being to fill the entire world with seven kinds of precious substances and offer them to the three jewels. And the reason for this is that offering precious substances accumulates wealth, but that wealth is an acquisition within cyclic existence, whereas the teaching of Dharma causes liberation from cyclic existence. So that's the reason for the vast amount of merit in the wisdom practices. So we need to do this learning part very intensely, because without a vast amount of learning, we will not be able to understand the two truths, relative truth and absolute truth. And if we don't understand them, then we don't understand the sense of the profound scriptures. And if we don't do that, then your mind will not be liberated, which is the whole point. So therefore, we need to study. And so we need to do our meditation practice on wisdom by preparing. We need to sit in the correct posture. We recommend the Vairochana posture, but a correct meditation posture. Then we need to go for refuge. Then we need to generate the enlightenment thought. And those are all the preparatory practices. Then we need to go into the main practice, which is the meditation on emptiness, which is the lack of substantial self of persons or phenomena. In other words, the perfection of wisdom. And then at the conclusion, we need to dedicate our merit. We need to share the positive spiritual energy that we've generated through our practice. And we particularly in this case want to dedicate it towards the awakening of all sentient beings, especially those who do not understand emptiness. Okay. So we want to cultivate compassion for those sentient beings. And then we have our post-meditation practice, which is we need to accomplish all of our other activities, whatever they are, by viewing appearances like a dream. So when we dream, we wake up, we can very clearly see that the dream was just an appearance. It seemed real at the time, but it wasn't. It was an appearance. And our waking reality, so to speak, is like a dream. We don't say it is a dream, but it is like a dream in the sense that it is an appearance which we misapprehend. And so this misapprehension is what causes us not to accomplish the perfection of wisdom. So that's what we need to work with. So in Sakyapandita gives a very brief summary at this point in the text, where he talks about first we want to train in moral discipline. We want to train in moral discipline because without moral discipline, we're not going to go anywhere in our spiritual practice. So what we need to do is check our morality meter. And if we've committed non-virtue, which inevitably we do, we need to do confession and purification before we start any of those practices. Okay. So first step is to train in moral discipline. Then we want to gather virtue or accumulate merit because a large amount of merit is required in order to achieve or accomplish wisdom. And then after all that, we need to benefit sentient beings by sealing all of our practice with emptiness. So Sakyapandita gives a very special, what he calls a special aspect of skillful means to be practiced post-meditation, and that is the seven-limbed prayer. This is a prayer that we say in almost every practice that we do. So the seven limbs being prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting the Buddhas to teach, and requesting that they remain and not enter into nirvana, and then the dedication. So this seven-limb prayer, Sakyapandita says, if we want to accomplish wisdom, we need to recite this prayer seven, or sorry, three times during the day and three times during the night. And this is a very quick method for attaining wisdom. So, to go into a little bit more detail of the actual sequence of things, so the first step is morality. The second step is to study the theory of wisdom, that is, what is to be eliminated. So what is to be eliminated is our attachment to the self of persons and the self of objects. And then we need to cite reliable sources to refute erroneous doctrines. And the sources are the texts that I listed earlier. We need to study with an authentic teacher because this is a topic that needs guidance. And then we need to refute erroneous doctrines through the reliable experience-based knowledge that we accumulate until we reach the conclusion of selflessness. At that point, we dedicate our merit, and then we go into our post-meditation practice that we just mentioned. So that is the outline of the practice of the attainment of wisdom. There's a lot involved. It's a deep and long study, but there's benefits for doing this. So Sakyapandita summarizes by saying that there are, in order to correctly accomplish discerning of wisdom, there are four qualities we need to accomplish, and there are seven attachments we need to eliminate. So the four qualities to accomplish are the absence of imperfect discerning wisdom, which is the antithesis of discerning wisdom. So that's the refuting of the erroneous views. The second one is to the realization of the non-discursive. And by that, he means the realization of the absence of a substantial self. The third one is the fulfilling of the wishes of other sentient beings by removing their doubts and explaining this teaching to them, and therefore benefiting them and supporting their progress, with the caveat that these are advanced teachings and they're not to be explained to spiritually immature persons because it might cause misunderstanding on their part. Mainly the extreme of nihilism is the risk. Okay. So we want to be careful about who we share these teachings with. And then the fourth is to bring sentient beings to spiritual maturity through discerning wisdom by establishing sentient beings on the three vehicles. As far as the seven attachments that need to be eliminated, we need to be free from the attachment to the antithesis of wisdom, that is, the imperfect discerning wisdom, the wrong views, in other words. The second attachment to be abandoned is procrastination. So that's delaying our practice. Oh, I did a little practice today. That's enough. I'll do it later. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. I'll do it next year. I'll do it when I retire. That kind of procrastination is to be eliminated. The third is being satisfied with just a little bit of wisdom. It's called premature wisdom. So, oh, I get it a little bit. That's good enough. Now let's go watch TV. We want to continue with our practice and not be satisfied until we attain wisdom, the perfection of wisdom. The fourth one is hoping to get something in return. So, for example, oh, maybe if I teach this to somebody, they'll think I'm a really good teacher. And who knows, they might invite me for dinner or give me offerings or something. So, in other words, having an impure motivation. The fifth one is to wish for results of our wisdom in the next life. So that would be something like, well, if I study and contemplate in this life, maybe I'll be a great scholar in my next life, and that's good enough. And that's a very imperfect motivation that needs to be abandoned. The sixth one is attachment to imperfect wisdom and its propensities. So we have ignorance and we need to clear that away, but we also have these what are called remainders or stains or propensities. And we need to clear those up too. And that happens later on in the path, but we want to make sure that we don't have any attachment to those propensities. And the seventh one is called distraction. And there's two subdivisions. One is a kind of longing to go back to the foundation path, which for a great vehicle practitioner is not something we want to do. And then the other kind of distraction is the distraction of conceptual thinking. So in other words, the thinking that myself is real, objects are real, so on and so forth. So we want to rid ourselves of these seven attachments and the dispositions towards them. Now, if we have time, I want to start going into what are some of the benefits of practicing discerning wisdom, of attaining it. So we have temporary benefits and we have ultimate benefits. As far as temporary benefits go, there are benefits in this life and benefits in future lives. So in this life, if we attain wisdom, we can acquire many excellent qualities by thoroughly training in discerning wisdom. For example, we can develop a wise intelligence about the various objects of knowledge. We can have a confident presence of our mind that is not overawed by anyone. So, in other words, we can answer questions, we can be confident, we can feel fearless about this topic. Another benefit in this life is that discerning wisdom, our own internal, intrinsic, discerning wisdom will be set free. In other words, our Buddha nature will be uncovered. We all have Buddha nature, it's just covered up with our negativity. So this practice uncovers it. A benefit will be that your mind will become at ease. In other words, attachments get reduced. You will enter into the ranks of the learned wise. You'll become famous among humans and gods. And you will become a trusted authority for the whole world. So those are some of the benefits of this life. In future lives, wherever you are born, you will have consummate discerning wisdom. You'll be born with wisdom. You will have very sharp moral faculties, and you will retain what you will learn. You won't have to relearn everything every time again. You'll retain it. And you will be able to discourse with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So this takes us to a higher level of teaching when we can receive teachings directly from Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in our future lives. And also, it cuts off our obscurations to knowledge, okay? And we'll be able to correctly teach Dharma to others. And then Sakya Pandita puts etc. So very often in the book, he doesn't go on and list every single thing. And he says, if I did that, this book would be so long, nobody would read it. So he puts etc. quite often in these commentaries, in these lists. So those are the temporary benefits. And then we have the ultimate benefits. Generally speaking, it's through the perfection of wisdom that realizes selflessness that we attain Buddhahood. So it's in very sort of simplistic terms, this is how you get enlightened. In addition, you will comprehend noble things exactly as they are in their full variety and extent. And the example that's given in this case is, if you see a peacock feather, it has all these incredible colors in it. And, a person who's spiritually advanced but not enlightened, they might be able to say, oh, the karma for this section of color, you know, the peacock feathers have like an eye in it. The karma for this eye is da 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 da, and the karma for that eye is da 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 da. Whereas a Buddha, can go in and pinpoint every single speck of color and articulate the karma that produced that tiny little speck of color in that peacock feather. So it's the full variety and extent of noble things. And also, excuse me, at enlightenment, oh, we're running out of time. Okay. So we'll conclude this teaching and I'll pick it up next time. We will conclude, as always, with our dedication. So, I dedicate the merit for the benefit of all beings. By all the merit of these thoughts and words, may I and every being to whom I am linked, when these imperfect forms are cast away, be born miraculously in the realm of bliss, crossing the 10 stages directly after birth. May emanations fill the 10 regions in service for the benefit of all. Bodhicitta's precious may it arise where it has never arisen, and where it has arisen, may it ever grow and flourish. Sarva Mangalam. Thank you.